you know, and the book is pleading with us, experience this, you know, and that this is a part of my recovery and my spiritual awakening coming full circle.
It's important to note that early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous look nothing like what we experience today on a daily basis. I personally believe in what they did way back when. And so in an early meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, what you're going to get is you're going to get somebody that's going to read a passage, because all this comes from first century Christianity. That's no secret. Makes a lot of people unhappy, but that's just the way it is. And so they're going to read a passage, and they're going to sit, and they're going to have quiet time. It was essential to the recovery of an alcoholic to have quiet time. We call it meditation. When that meditation was done, a recovered alcoholic would get up and give testimony, and another, and another. If you were a newcomer, you were asked to listen. You were assigned a sponsor, depending on what part of the country you were in. It was done slightly different places, different ways. You were assigned a sponsor. It wasn't somebody you liked. It wasn't somebody that dressed the way you wanted to dress or had the life that you wanted to have or drove the car that, you know, or had this great... You were assigned a sponsor. Very possibly someone that you had nothing other than alcoholism in common. That person brought you through the work. Okay? You did not share in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous unless you were a recovered alcoholic. And I share this with you because when I work with people, I make several requests of them early on. And one of those requests is when they go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, depending on what part of the work we're in, number one, they don't introduce themselves as alcoholics, and number two, they don't share. And I will tell you that by that time they have a sponsor that has a sponsor, and they get that there's no reason for them to share. There's no reason for them to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, complain, whine, bitch, and, you know, carry on. They are there to listen. They are there to learn. And inside that time, in their silence, they get to make distinctions. They get to hear people talk about their program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they get to hear people talk about everything else. And they get to choose. They learn a lot of things in that silence. And then after five, they're given the choice if they want to share or not, because after five, they've had an experience. The fog is lifted, and they now have something to share with another alcoholic. Inside that time, they have to work with newcomers to get them to meetings and to share whatever experience they have at that point, but not to work through the program of recovery, because they're not there yet.
Again, on the first page, you know, I have a little note to myself down at the bottom, you know, cooperate, never criticize, to be helpful is our only aim. And the book is very specific about how to go through an approach with a new person. And I have a little note to myself. I have a little guideline. I have a little sort of mantra. My sponsee is always right, and my sponsor is always right. You know, my sponsor is always right for obvious reasons, right? And what I mean by the sponsee is always right is I try not to argue or get in the ring with the disease, you know. And this chapter is so amazing for years. You know, what's so great is that there's different kinds of sponsors. There's all kinds of personalities in AA, which is so wonderful. Steve is probably a different kind of sponsor than I am. You know, I don't know. Maybe you are. Maybe we're probably twins, but we're spiritual twins. No, but we're probably two different kinds of sponsor. A conversation with one of his sponsees might go differently than a conversation I would have with my sponsees. And so for years, I thought that I would look at other people. I had to be however kind of person they were. And basically, what the book says over and over and over again is that I need to deal with each person on an individual basis. Now, that sounds kind of funny at first because, you know, there's part of me that really understands that I have certain guidelines that I give people that I sponsor, and there's a very specific formula. However, the book emphasizes, this chapter emphasizes over and over again, find out on the top of 90, find out when you discover a prospect for AA, find out all you can about him. Not I'm going to run in there and tell this person what to do. You know, find out all you can about him. And then down in a paragraph, get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition. You need this information to put yourself in his place. So it's not about me with my agenda. It's really, I found so much that working with another alcoholic is really about listening, you know, and really seeing this person for who they are. I sponsor a lot of different girls, a lot of different ladies, and they're all different. You know, one of them needs a call time. Another one doesn't need a call time. That's fine by me. You know, this is all about, for me, you know, the book is really directing me. How can I be the most effective sponsor? How can I carry this message most effectively? You know, it goes through, again, there's a very specific direction. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk. You know, I've had people call me when they're very drunk, and I just share this because it's good to have, like, specific direction. And, you know, there's that part of me, like, I feel like, oh, God, they're calling, you know, when the hand reaches out, I want, you know. But if they're drunk, there's really nothing I can say to them. So the questions that I've been taught to ask is, are you in medical trouble? Do you need me to call you an ambulance? Do you need me to come over? You know, are you in danger? You know, and if I can answer to the satisfaction that they're not, then, you know, I tell them to call me in the morning. But I don't waste time trying to talk to someone who's not sober. I mean,
it's also important to note that in the course of that conversation that you're going to have with this individual, you know, back in the day, I happen to have with me a meeting list from 1947. When I work with newcomers, I also have the first meeting list. From Alcoholics Anonymous in Manhattan, and I share it with people when we go through the forwards that 7 out of 10 were getting sober and staying sober. And here, guys, essentially there was no meetings for them to go to. So meetings have absolutely no correlation with recovery, and I try to pound this home time and time again. What they had was this book. That's what they had. And before they had this book, they had one-on-one, and they would sit down and they would work with alcoholics and detox sanitariums, they called them. We call them detoxes today. So there was no 90 and 90. There was no, you know, clean up and show up and drag your whatever to the whatever and get the whatever. There was none of that happy slogan stuff. There was this work. And it tells us about how they picked up their beds and they remained free men as a result of this. Now, no meetings, work. And it talks about stressing the spiritual feature freely. Heresy today. Oh, we don't want to chase them out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't want to hear about God. They need to make meetings. Well, no, they don't. And the truth of the matter is, if God chases them out of the meetings, alcohol will bring them right back again. And so if you got a problem with God, I feel for you. I'm willing to work that problem through with you. If you want to carry that resentment and leave, that's your prerogative. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to help you. I'm not here to save you. I'm here to help you. Trust me, I will do anything humanly possible to help you. And if you fail, I will go home and go to sleep. It'll be fine. I am not attached to your outcome. I'm here to do everything that I can, everything that I was taught to reach out to you and to help you. I have absolutely no connection to your outcome. And so when he talks about stressing the spiritual feature freely, it was for a reason. He knew that that was what the answer was. Now, we could talk all we want about 90s and 90s and, you know, making coffee. I am one of those people that does not believe that coffee is 12-step work. It's service work. It's important. My driving another alcoholic to a meeting is important. It is not the 12-step. It's service. You know what? I've had the great privilege to do service on different levels. And one of the real treats I had when I first got sober was I made a phone call to Intergroup of Greater New York. And they got me to my first meeting. And so that's been my love, and that's where I've done service every opportunity I've had. And I've got to sit on to be the chair of the steering committee. And as a result of that, one of the perks, that's how I got these early meeting lists. And I got to see some literature that was written by the founder and Silkworth and some really cool stuff. That has nothing to do with my 12-step work. That has nothing to do with me working with another alcoholic. That's just what I do to give back. That's my service. That has nothing to do with the 12-step of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is just my opinion. Please feel free to disagree with me. I'll talk to you after the meeting. If that's not good enough, take it home and talk to your sponsor. Making coffee is great. It's necessary. It's service. It has nothing to do with the 12th step. 12th step is very specific. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of this work, not making coffee.
Page 91 to 93, basically, it goes through how to have that conversation with someone who is brand new, you know, and you know, my sponsor uses this phrase one time. She says it's like slipping them a spiritual Mickey, because by the end of the conversation, you know, when I see people start to open up, they think it's their idea that they're opening up. And it's really great. It's this, and how do I do that? I share my experience, strength, and hope. I talk about my drinking. I don't say you. You know, I talk about what's happened for me. I slip it into the conversation. And again, the book emphasizes if he's not communicative, it's on the bottom of 91. If he's not communicative, if he's in a serious mood, if his mood is light, you know, again, it's all about keying in to where that person's at that moment. You know, let's see. Another thing that Steve just talked about is he talked about, you know, at the top of 96, you know, I do get wrapped up in the outcomes of people's sobriety, you know, and that's something that I've had to work on because, you know, I love my girls so much, you know, and I'm sure, you know, like I get so excited, you know, and I've had, you know, thank God for the 10th step, because, you know, I've had to do a lot of 10th step in regards to sponsorship, fears, resentments. So at the top of 96, it talks about search out another alcoholic and try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. I've gotten to sponsor a lot of people, you know, over time. And, you know, this has really helped me, this part. You know, sometimes I will find myself working harder for someone's sobriety than they are willing to work. You know, and the truth is that I know for me, you know, I would carry my sponsor on my back if I had to. You know, the gift of desperation. And if someone doesn't have that, I can't give that to them. You know, the desire must come from within, you know, and it talks about that later on in the chapter, that if the prospect is to find God, the desire must come from within, you know. And again, going back to that, it's not me, you know, it's not this isn't anything that, you know, this is all recycled material, stuff I've done or stuff that people's told me. I'm telling you, you know, it's stuff that Annette said to me. I'm telling you, it's really nothing original. However, it is my original experience, strength, and hope. And there's no other sponsor like me. So each one of you here has a unique message. And I think that's another really important part of the 12th step. I hear a lot of people, and I know for me, for years, I thought, what kind of, you know, I could never be like so-and-so. I couldn't sponsor them, you know. And with this book in my hand, you know, and with God, I just bring in the guns, the big guns, God and the book, you know, and the steps. And there we go. And from that framework, we can begin, you know, and then my own experience, strength, and hope from what I've actually done, not what I think you should do, from my opinion. Steve?
It talks about give them this book and let them read this book. And I always get a kick out of this because people say, oh, I could have never done that when I first got sober. Mm-hmm. Listen to you. They were dealing with gutter drunks. Gutter drunks. You know, we all drive to these meetings. We get rides to detoxes with valises of new clothes. Oh, I could never read this book when I got sober. I was too mocus. No, that's just your ego and your false pride. Trust me, if your life, if you got a real clear picture that your life was dependent on this work, you would read this book. You know, and I sit down, I take that out away from them because I sit down and I read it to them, word by word. So guess what? You don't even have to read. You have to listen. You know, it's important to note that, did you want to say something?
No, I'm just, yeah. Okay.
So it's important to note that, you know, in this 12th step, you know, you have to have the courage to be unpopular. And in this, you know, 2008 in the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to ask you and I'm going to challenge you to have the courage to be unpopular. I'm going to ask you if you've had a spiritual awakening as a result of this work, do you have the courage to sit in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, popular Alcoholics Anonymous, and say, you know what, this is my experience. Not that anyone else is wrong, because they're not. If what they're, what they're doing is for them is working for them, God bless them, and you want to congratulate them for that. But there's still that alcoholic in the room that's coming back for the 19th time that meetings aren't working for. And there's a reason for it. There is no recovery in the fellowship. The recovery is in the program, and it's up to us to make them understand that. Give them that option. My sponsor was the first guy that brought the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to my geographic area. And his sponsor, he would call a sponsor and he'd say, you know what, you know, I'm it. You know, and he says, and I don't ever hear anyone talking about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, well, if there's no one talking about the program, it just means that you're not opening your mouth enough. And he was vilified. He was hated. Because it was new and it was different. Okay? And so what I'm going to challenge you to do is I'm going to challenge you, when I sit down and I work with people, I ask them, you know, every day when we work, I ask them what their favorite line was and what they got from what we did. And I challenge them to go into the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and share that with people. You know, Heidi talked earlier about having a conversation with people. It's a very simple, Roger's in sales. It's a very simple idea. Bill's teaching us how to set the hook. There's nothing mystical about it. He wants us to know about them so that inside that conversation, we know where to sell them. That's all it is. We got to set the hook. And so when you go out from here and you go into the meetings of Popular Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to ask you, set the hook. You know, if you don't know what to do, turn to page 52. It never fails. The bedevilments. That's our fertile ground. You know, when they talk about the front lines of recovery, it's detoxes, rehabs, and unfortunately, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Go there. Have the courage to be unpopular. Have the courage to state your belief. Have the courage to share your experience with this work.
Yeah. You know, on 94, it talks about, it talks about if somebody doesn't respond, you know, that you need to make it plain to people that they're under no obligation for you. And I love this idea of just for free and for fun. You know, that we do these things for free and for fun. And when I find myself getting resentful because someone hasn't, you know, they're not calling every day, they're not following my directions, what is that? You know, what is that? You know, that's you know, it's ultimately, it's about, you know, this is for free and for fun. And they don't owe me anything. You know, all I ask is, you know, like Steve said, is that they pass this on to another alcoholic. It's very clear on 95, never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they worked with you. And somebody pointed out, you know, my sponsor laid out the kit of spiritual tools, but I had to bend over and pick them up myself, you know? And, you know, she wasn't going to work those tools for me. You know, and, you know, offer him friendship and fellowship. If he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. You know, invite people along. You know, that's one of the biggest tools. Like, let them get excited. You know, in my sobriety, you know, this goes into practicing the principles. My sobriety, how attractive is my sobriety to other people? You know, for a while, I went through a period where I felt self-conscious about how excited I was about AA. You know, because sometimes people would be like, oh, you're such, you know, you're so excited or you're so enthusiastic or something. And then I thought, you know, why shouldn't I be excited? I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, and this is the message that we carry. This is the great news that this book has for us. You know, again, you know, the book is very clear on 95 down. He must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. Okay. And that's an okay question to ask. You know, do you want to continue with this work or not? You know, I don't need to argue with this person or, you know, their own alcoholism at this point. Like if I'm working the steps with someone and their own alcoholism is their best advocate, you know, I don't need to replay their story. They've gone through their story. You know, they've got to follow their own conscience. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. Another thing that I just wanted to talk about is just, you know, really quick is on 96, it talks about offering financial assistance, offering, you know, the assistance of finding a job. And it really, the book is very clear. You should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have, right? I've gone through periods in my sobriety where I've been like, you know, hero sponsor. I've missed shifts. You know, I've missed shifts at the restaurant to go, you know, because I need to, you know, work with a sponsee, or I need to speak at a meeting. I've been late to work because I'm on a sponsee call, you know, and hello, the second half of the 12th step is practicing these principles in all my affairs. The book is very clear. I'm not to do this work at the expense of my family. I've had to learn to, you know, have set times with my husband. You know, this really goes into the practice of the principles. It's so important. It's vital for me to do this work, and I have to live this work in my home. You know, Steve, I see you getting up.
I thought you were done. I'm sorry.
And, you go.
And so, you know, in the original basic text, it talks about especially alcoholics in the 12th step. And it's important to note, as Heidi was saying earlier, in all our affairs. So Bill's talking about how to work with another alcoholic and you know, how to set the hook and how to get him started in the process and bring him through the program. It's important to note that our charge is to be of service to our loved ones, our communities, our employers and employees, okay? We work with alcoholics. It's what we do. My belief is, earlier in the book, where it says it has its advantages for all, I am now at the point where I am to be of service. This, my recovery stopped being about me way before this. And so my recovery now is specifically about my being of service. Now, whatever that means to you, I don't know. And you'll need to figure that out for yourself. But I am going to share with you that if you look, you know, a lot of us stop at 103. But if you take a look, we're at chapter 7 now. Mm-hmm. So Bill took the earliest 6 chapters to go through 11 steps. So I'm going to suggest to you that for the 12th step, he took 5 chapters. Or is it 4 chapters? You got working with others, you got to the wives, you got to the family, you got to the employers, and you got a vision for you. If you look through and you read those chapters, I used to stop at 103 when I worked with people, and my sponsor said, why are you doing that? Are you shortchanging them? I said, well, that's the work. He said, no, the work goes all the way up through a vision for you. And I said, explain that to him. He says, I want you to sit back, and I want you to read, and I want you to find all of the spiritual principles and to the wives, the family afterward, to the employer, and the vision for you. And I sat and I did that, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. He says, well, now I want you to find all the spiritual don'ts. And sometime later, I said, wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we're given directions, really, on how to act. And now, you might not be an employer. You might not have a wife. You might not have a family, I don't know. But the truth of the matter is, we're given some really specific directions in those chapters. And it was important enough, you know, for him to write them for a reason. And so what I found in 12, we're talking about working with others. Those other chapters have a lot to do with that. I want to share something else with you real quick. And has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'm going to do it anyway. My agreement with my sponsor is such, and I would challenge you to look at your relationship with your sponsor. And the other thing is, he's only sober 17 or 18 years, and I'm sober 21 years, so I'm not a big fan of time meaning all that much. But my commitment to him is that I do what he asks. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have spirited discussions. You know, it's never come to blows. But we do have spirited discussions. But my commitment to him is that I do what he asks for a very simple reason. There's spiritual virtue in taking direction. I need to be accountable at all times. And so he's the guy that I'm accountable to here. When he's not around, he's the guy that I'm accountable to. We always need someone to be accountable to, and it's important in the 12th step because we're asking people to be accountable to us.
You know, the chapter also really talks about how to deal with the person's family. And I've had the experience, that's a really important piece of this. And what I do is I had a woman who was trying to get sober, and I was also friendly with her partner, right? So her partner was, while this person was trying to get sober, her partner would call me sometimes because we had a relationship separate from this woman. And it was, I had to be very careful because I had to remember at all times that my primary, I wanted to remain most effective for for the person so that I didn't spoil an opportunity to be useful to the AA prospect, right? And so at a certain time, I had to say, I can't talk to you anymore about this person's behavior, but how about, you know, I could get you the numbers of some Al-Anon women, you know, and that's been really helpful. Thank you. You know, a couple more things, you know, on page 100 is one of my favorite, you know, parts in the book. That whole first full paragraph is a set of promises. And again, you know, I've talked this weekend about I need to bring this into the present. That here's a promise right now, follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently, right now, live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Another thing that it talks about back on 98 is, you know, talking about burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. You know, this is true for me. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, if this is something that I've found true for me. It doesn't matter what my mother's doing. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter what Ron's doing. You know, that I can get well. And those only requirements are that I trust God and clean house. And that is the message that I'm to carry to people that I sponsor. Steve?
There are several gifts that I've gotten as a result of this work, not the least of which was sitting with many, many men and women and watching their light bulb go off. I mean, it's just the absolutely most gratifying experience I've ever had in my life. And so as you do this work, you're going to find that you will be relieved of the desire and compulsion to drink alcohol. You will find a new freedom and peace. It talks about how we can go places other free men can go, and that's my experience. It is my belief that bottles are a symbol. That's my truth. And then there's something else that happens. And I don't know how long it took to happen, or I don't know when it happened. But as a result of this work, there's the ability to just be absolutely present. All my life, I wanted to be somewhere else with somebody else doing something else. Mm-hmm. All my life. And as a result of this, I'm able to be right here, right now, and wanting to be nowhere else. So I'm guessing you got a sense that matters to me. And that's available. You know, that's available to you. You know, on a personal note, this is my birthday weekend. I should have been somewhere else, down in New Orleans or Savannah, Georgia or something, doing something when this occurred. Thank you, buddy.
Happy birthday.
And so when this opportunity arose, you know, and I can't tell you that there isn't any place that I wanted to be, you know, other than right here, right now, with you guys, and I want to thank you all for that opportunity.
Thanks. Happy birthday, Steve. You know, just the end of this chapter talks about, you know, it talks about being able to live in the world, you know, assuming we are spiritually fit. And I know that we have 1 minute here. And what I get, you know, I encourage if you're thinking about, you know, if you're in a sticky situation, to read these few pages. They've been so helpful to me. And what I've found in really working with these situations out in the world is that if I'm feeling sticky, it's best just to work with another alcoholic. You know, it's best, you know, better be safe than sorry. You know, and it talks about really making no bones at a proper time and place. Explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. And just to wrap up, like, I really, you know, for years, I just thought, you know, I was just a wreck in my mind. You know, I didn't think I had anything to offer. And sponsoring and working with others has reversed that old idea for me. I sometimes often do a big book meeting with my girls and their girls and their girls before my home group. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And what I always encourage them to do is to let the big book come alive for them. But, you know, the trick is the big book is coming alive for me, right? What is that? How does that work? And I don't know. I'm just so grateful to be sober, and we got to stop because there's more good stuff to come. But I love you. Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Liz, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, I'm Roger Taylor. I'm an alcoholic.
I don't know about you guys, but I sure can feel God in the room today. Wow, what an amazing meeting we've been having for these past 24 hours. I just wanted to kick it off a couple of things. I wanted to make a special note. You know, as we were just talking about the 12th step, which was a fantastic job, and you know, I often hear women say, I can't sponsor. I have nothing to offer. I have no time. I'm not right. And the truth of the matter is that they just don't want to. And that's, and you know, from the beginning of the book, it tells us over and over that this isn't like an option, you know, carrying the message. They tell us from the get-go that, you know, carrying this message is part of recovery. That's skimping on our spiritual life is not doing that. And on a personal note, I wanted to wish a happy anniversary to Faye, who has 7 years today. And one of the greatest joys of my life is having sponsees, and to have you here means a lot to me. So to go back into the book, you know, I was thinking about in the beginning, we were talking about, you know, these three pertinent ideas. And I just want to make sure that we were all clear.
Michael and Kara are also celebrating 6 months.
Yay! Woohoo! Lots of anniversaries in the room. Thank you, Steffi. Okay, so we talk about these three pertinent ideas on page 60. So I just want to look at those real quick just to make sure that we were clear, you know, that all the speakers were clear. And if we weren't, then you can come and talk to us. One, A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Hopefully we were able to cover that. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. I think we talked about that a little bit. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And it was brought to my attention. It's very important. It's not that God could and would if he were found, just that if he were sought. So it's in the seeking is where he would recover us to sanity. And I just wanted to touch on real quick about the chapters that we don't have time for, but a couple of things that stuck out for me. Chapter 8, to the wives, page 104, there's a line there. It says, no situation is too difficult and no unhappiness too great to be overcome. And I think that that is just such a beautiful promise because, you know, we come in here thinking there's no way we're ever going to right these wrongs. There's no way we're going to ever set things on track. And again, in Two Wives, page 116, I mean, that's a great starting point for a lot of great stuff about relationships. But I just want to read a little bit here, the very bottom, page 116. But it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. Now we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our lives. And my sponsor reminds me that halfway through the steps, we stop working the steps and the steps start working us. When we do that, we find it solves our problems too. The ensuing lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. And then down a little bit farther, 117, in spite of your newfound happiness, there will be ups and downs. That's life. Many of the old problems will stay with you. This is as it should be. So we're not going to be rendered white as snow. We're supposed to have problems. That's what makes us human and useful. And a little bit into the family afterwards on page 124. And these are just things that are meaningful to me. You can find your own stuff in here. Middle of page 124, showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. The key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So those are just the important things in the family afterward and Two Wives that I just wanted to point out before we get into one of my favorite chapters, A Vision for You. Like I said, I consider it the Hamlet of the big book. It is so perfectly written, in my opinion.
And I will try and do that some kind of justice. You know, I'm going to help. At the beginning of my big book, on the very front page, even before you turn it over, I have written down a statement, and it says, be a blessing in somebody else's life today. And I have that statement written at the head of this chapter too, because what we've done over the preceding chapters, what we've done over the last couple of days, is we've gotten a lot of information, we've gotten a lot of instructions, we've got a lot of promises, and now we know exactly what to do. And as I said, Steve said, being a salesman, now I'm going to throw you the punchline, now we're going to throw you the punchline. This is what happens if you do everything that we've heard about this weekend. Bill Wilson was a great way, had a great way of presenting a situation to anyone. If you read the book from a semi-literary point of view, what he does at all times is he goes back, reminds you of what you've just previously read, because we're alcoholics, we have a tendency to forget things. He presents us with a new situation. And every time he tells us that we have to do some form of work, he follows that statement up either in that sentence or the following sentence with, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there's never any, if you do this, you will be damned. There is never any of this, if you do this, you will go to hell. And that is the kind of thing that a lot of us have been brought up to believe. You know, we don't want to do this stuff because we don't know what's going to happen. What Bill did in writing this book is, if we do the work that he suggests that we do, he tells us exactly what will happen. And that's what the first part of A Vision for You is. A Vision for You is a chapter that's in two parts. It gives us an idea of what can happen, and it explains how that can happen by the only way that we've learnt this weekend. Let's see how somebody else did it. And they go over the early part in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Reading that second half of this chapter was what prompted me to read a book called, you know, Dr. Bob and the Old-Timers. It prompted me to find out how Ozzy came upon this house. It prompted me to come to this house 12, 13 years ago. It prompted me to go to Dr. Bob's house in Akron, and it prompted me to do something that I always consider extremely special. Many years ago, my sponsor and I sat on the same kitchen chairs at the same kitchen table where Ebby and Bill spoke, and Ebby came up with that phenomenal idea that we can have a vision, our own vision of a God of our understanding. And that kitchen chair was in a house in Brooklyn, and it's currently in the house in Bedford, New York, Stepping Stones. If you've not been there, I encourage you to go there. There's some wonderful things there. In fact, upstairs, and this has really got another point, but it's something that I personally absolutely love. Lois Wilson was a very short woman. She was about the same height as my mother, who was very short. And there is a photograph upstairs of her. She went to visit a group of alcoholics in Southern California. And the name of this group is called the Chapter 5. And they are, this group consists entirely of 300-pound-plus bikers, tattooed, the kind of people we would normally shy away from. And there is this little short woman, 4'10", and there's a photograph there given to her by this group, the Chapter 5, and she is sitting on this exquisitely chopped Harley Davidson, and there is this big burly biker who was the leader of that chapter at the time. And it is such a wonderful photograph because it's, you know, it's what can happen to us. The absolute unexpected, if we do this work, can come to us. I'd just like to read a couple of things. I'd love to, and as Liz so succinctly put it, this is the Hamlet of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And to prove that, I'm going to read this paragraph. It starts out about talking about our alcoholism and other people's alcoholism. And it says, as we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. How descriptive is that? I mean, that sounds like it's straight out of Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, and I should have known this, but I didn't know what the word Denizen meant. So I looked it up, and here's a description of what a Denizen is. It's an inhabitant, or, and very appropriately for me, it is an alien admitted to citizenship, accepting certain rights. Now, what are the certain rights that we are accorded if we become Denizens of King Alcohol? And that's right after described The Awful Awakening to Face the Hideous Four Horsemen. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Those are our, that's the alternative option for what else we're going to read about.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't take me to be drunk or, you know, coming out of a blackout, waking up on a floor that I don't know where I'm at, or people that I don't know I'm with, to feel these feelings. I mean, I felt these feelings without alcohol, that terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And I've wondered, how could I end up here again? And luckily, I've got tools today to help me get there. But I remember when I wasn't drinking and I didn't have these tools. And I'm often reminded about this time that I was working with this woman, and she didn't take me through the book. She took me through a set of other methods of working the steps, and I was working my ninth step, and I felt just as crazy as a bed bug. And I knew that other people looked way happier than me, and I just couldn't put my finger on what it was, what made the difference. And then I changed sponsors to my current sponsor, and what made all the difference was going through this book line by line, word by word, doing everything she said, no matter what, whether I was happy about it, whether I liked it. Freedom comes for me by taking actions I don't understand or agree with. And, you know, someone once said to me, and I really believe it's true, that there is a certain type of loneliness that only an alcoholic knows, that where I can be in a room full of people and feel completely alone. And from working these steps the way that I've been taught, even when I'm alone, I feel like I'm in a room full of people. I feel like I've got the army of AA at my back at every moment. I feel like I've got that cone of safety of my higher power whenever I let him in. I mean, whether I feel safe, you know, or not, I am. That was a promise that was given to me. That was the freedom that was given to me. That when I do fall into the terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair, that, you know, there for me now, there's a way out. I don't have to live there today. I'm not going to die there today. I'm reminded that I have a disease that can't tell the difference between ego-threatening and life-threatening. And very often, when my ego is being threatened, I think I'm going to die. Physically going to die. I'm never going to ever get out of this again. It's over. Call my mother. Call the coroner. I'm done. And I'm, you know, but that's my ego. And all of this is to smash that, to get rid of that. My ego is going to kill me at this point. And what's really important about a beginning of a vision for you, which is why we work with newcomers and go to meetings, is because if I don't remember what can happen to me, what it's like, what that awful despair, that denizen of mad realm, that chilling vapor feels like, I'm not going to go to a meeting. Why do I need to answer the phone? Why do I need to do any of these things if, you know, if my life did not depend on this? This is life and death. And it's really easy to forget that when my life gets great, when I've got the job, the relationship, you know, paying off my amends, doing, you know, I'm happy, joyous, and free. It's so easy to forget, and then I slip right back to where I started, because it is a slippery slope for me.
On page 152, the second paragraph, it explains, it says something here, we have shown how we got out from under. The original title of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, before it went to the Works Publishing Company, was going to be A Way Out. That was the title, that was the working title for the book. There unfortunately were several books with that title in the registered with the Library of Congress, so they had to come up with another one. But how do we get out from under? And you say, when you ask a sponsee, are they willing to do what we have done? And they will say, if they have this enthusiasm that hopefully we have sparked, or hopefully that Alcoholics Anonymous has sparked, or hopefully that the meetings have sparked, or one particular person, it doesn't matter, one or a combination. If that person is then willing, they will have some questions. I know what I did. I was 48 years old when I got sober, and I said, but am I to be consigned to a life where I should be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? And those righteous people that I saw were my parents, who were evangelical Christians, and I believe that their lives were boring, glum, and stupid, and I was designated for that. My sponsor pointed out to me, when he gave me my first copy of the Big Book, before I'd even started writing it, it was a little copy like the one that Liz has there, and in the very front page, he wrote page 132. He didn't write anything else, he just wrote page 132. And I turned to page 132, I read it, read it, couldn't figure out why he put that on the front of my book. The more I worked with him, the more I understood what was happening. What happens on page 132? Now, I'm an engineer. I'm a computer programmer. My father was an engineer. So I'd become very technical about where things are. 16 lines down, 16 lines up, two words in, two words in from either side. So it's absolutely, mathematically, scientifically, slap damn bang in the middle of that page is we absolutely insist on enjoying life. Absolutely insist. It's not, well, maybe you can. It's not, you know, if you do. We absolutely insist on enjoying life.
I'm gonna pop in real quick. There's such great stuff in this chapter, and it's just, you know, basically rehashing things that we've been talking about all weekend. But there's this one part that I want to just talk about on page 154 and 155. You know, Bill goes in again and talks about the history of how he was in the Mayflower Hotel that day, you know, and, you know, the bar was to the left, the phone was to the right, he lost all his money, lost the business deal, and he so succinctly goes through what, like, goes through my head all the time, right, left, yes, no, buy it, don't buy it, call, don't call. And he talks about whether or not he should go into the bar, and he says, where is it? Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an acquaintance and would have a lonely weekend. Of course he couldn't drink, but why not sit hopefully at a table, a bottle of ginger ale before him? After all, had he not been sober 6 months now, perhaps he could handle, say, three drinks. Suddenly he goes from ginger ale to three drinks, okay? No more.
In an instant.
Yeah, in an instant. No more. That's insanity. Fear gripped him. He was on thin ice. Okay, so he knows that he's in big trouble. That's the pause we're trying to get to. That's what's going to keep between me and a drink, is that moment to recognize I'm in danger. And the most amazing thing, and when I read this again recently, what really caught me and really choked me up is at the last sentence on page 154, his sanity returned and he thanked God. And what really spoke to me about that is, you know, I read this very dogmatically sometimes. I think Heidi was talking about, you know, sanity returned. Thank you, God. Move to the phone. Next piece of business. And I forget that what we're dealing with here is a man, like a human being. He's got, you know, skin, blood, guts, just like the rest of us. And I was thinking about those moments where I've been on the edge. Do I or don't I? Yes or no? Right or left? And not one of these, like, you know, these moments like, should I buy it or should I not buy it? Should I scream at my mother? Should I not? Should I kick this person down the stairs? Should I not? Should I, like, quit my job here without talking to someone first or not? These, like, things that could potentially cause a lot of danger. And for that moment, those slight, slim moments where I choose the higher road, where I do the right thing, and I just say, thank you, just like that, because I know that that did not originate in me. Even the thanking doesn't originate in me. Like, how many times have we had that where we've made the choice, the harder, different choice, where we've just stopped and said, thank you. And then just like, how does that happen? Like, we were talking about, like, I think Joel was talking about, like, that sudden one day we were drinking and one day we weren't. How does that happen to me that every day I drank until a blackout? I did all sorts of awful, illegal, morally, you know, decompressing things that I would never in my right mind ever do. How do I have that moment where it hit me that that's the proper use of the will, is to say thank you, and then move along and go do the next right thing. And that is not easy. That takes a lot of work, and for me, if you're like me, doing it wrong a million times to finally get a chance to do it right.
When I was an active alcoholic, the word pause was never part of my vocabulary. And we're taught that in this book because it says that alcoholics are a whirlwind traveling through people's lives. Unfortunately, in America this week, you know, there's been whirlwinds, there's been floods. They don't stop, they don't pause. Once they gather momentum, they're off and going and destroying everything in their path. That's how I was as an alcoholic. I don't do that today, and I try not to, rather. I will never say I don't, because I'm always capable of that. I'm always capable of doing the wrong thing. But I have the opportunity to pause, think about my actions, and hopefully go ahead and do the right thing. Now, what is that? What is that all about? And it says right here in the middle of page 53, the end of the second paragraph, the age of miracles is still with us. The age of miracles is not the Middle Ages. The age of miracles is not Christ turning water into wine. The age of miracles is not the things that happened in the Old Testament. The age of miracles is still with us. Mm. How do we know that? Our own recovery proves that. Our own recovery proves that. Just quickly look at who you were and who you are now. Look at where you were Thursday and look at where you are now. The change that happens, the change that happens. My first sponsor told me, when somebody says to you, don't drink and go to meetings, they're doing you a huge disservice. They're doing the worst, they're killing you by saying that. You have to remember that you have to work and you have to change. And quite often when I speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I give an example of change. And sometimes when I'm in a meeting where I'm required to dress in business attire, which occasionally happens, I mean, I love to talk in meetings where I'm wearing, like, you know, a T-shirt and a pair of shorts because I'm very comfortable like that. But sometimes I'm asked by Alcoholics Anonymous to suit up and show up. And that's what that means. And I stand before people and I say, I explain this whole thing that we have to change everything about our lives, especially for newcomers, because they don't believe that they can and they don't believe that if they do, anything is going to happen. 1969, which is older than a lot of people in this room, I was inducted into the Amsterdam chapter of the Hells Angels because I wanted to be able to work security for the Rolling Stones on their European tour of that year. I was living in Amsterdam at the time. Up until last Wednesday, I was I've done many things in my life as a career. Not really. I've never had a career. I've done many things that earned me money, and the last thing I did that was earning me money is that I was working in a flower shop. I was learning about orchids. I was making flower arrangements. Joe L. from Long Island, his son was also a member of, his son was a member of the Pagans, which is a motorcycle gang from New Jersey. And his son got sober, and he ended up being a nurse practitioner in a hospital. And he said, would you ever think that you would want to sit there and have this guy coming towards you with a needle? And he's 300 pounds, tattooed sleeves, full tattooed, long ponytail. But his son was one of the gentle people that I knew. So that is what this is about. It's all about change, and our recovery proves this.
To go back a little bit, what we were talking about in step 6 and 7 is like, this is, you know, abandon your limited objectives. Abandon where you think that you're going to go. Like, if you think you know where you're going to be, if you follow this program, like 5, 10, 15 years from now, I can assure you, you will be laughing at it. It will be so beyond what you think, you know, and this is my experience for myself and for people that I've worked with and other women that I know. It's like, how do you go from being in a motorcycle gang to in a flower shop to a nurse? I mean, how does a girl like me who, like, drank in my parents' basement, end up in an Ivy League grad school. Like, how does that happen? Like, that would never have been on my radar, you know? So abandon those limited objectives at this point. God is in charge. He wants bigger, better things than your brain can even, like, comprehend. I really believe that.
The back part of the vision for you just goes over the early history of how Bill came to work with Dr. Bob. And that was through, you know, there was the priest that he called, the reverend that he called, his name was Walter Tunks, who presided over St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Akron, Ohio. It describes how Bill and Bob sat down, one alcoholic talking to another for the first time, the very first time ever. Bill had this vision that he believed that what he knew he could pass on to somebody else, help them, and in turn help him. Help him stay away from a drink. Because at that point in that hotel lobby, he must have been pacing up and down. Do I go to the bar? Do I go to the phone? Do I go to the bar? Do I go to the phone? The rest of the chapter talks about some of the other early prospects of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a great chapter to read. We don't have a great deal of time, so I don't want to belabor this. But it's very interesting. I read it And that's what gave me my love of the history of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah. I'm going to jump on page 158. After Bill and Bob meet up with their third prospect, and they're talking about that experience of, like, you know, I mean, seriously recreating the wheel here. It says halfway through the page, but he had found God, and in finding God, he had found himself. And then a little bit far, the next paragraph, two paragraphs down, it says, they had to give to others what they had found or be sunk. And this is all about carrying the message, so I stay sober. If my sponsees stay sober, that's awesome. That's all I want for them, is to be helpful. But if they don't stay sober, that doesn't mean I'm going to drink. I carry the message not so they stay sober. I mean, that would be a great benefit, but it's so I don't sink. So faith doesn't die with me. I have to carry the message so I stay sober. And I love this, you know, on page top of 159, they talk about, I guess the old folks are right after all, where they're talking about, like, the old folks who went to church. You know, early on, it asks us to lay aside our prejudices. Lay aside those prejudices that we come in with, you know, when it comes to God and believing in a higher power, all those prejudices, you know, and to really look at the, you know, the spiritual tools, like, use them, use different types of meditation, go to different churches and temples and what have you, you know, seek God, seek him. Just be a seeker. You know, they call it a spiritual thirst. Stay thirsty for your spirituality. And find new things. It says on still 159, though they knew they must help other alcoholics if they would remain sober, that motive became secondary. It transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. Because that's where it is. This woman I once heard share, she says, I asked God to take my life and he did. You know, when I was drinking, I asked him over and over, please kill me. Please take my life. I can't do it. Do it for me. And by giving me these steps, I have been reborn. He did. He took my life. It's not mine anymore. And all I'm here to do is to be of service. And sometimes I fall into selfishness and I've got 10, 11 to get back there. But, you know, I'm here to be of service. I'm here to present my discoveries to newcomers. I'm here to see lives get better and families reunited and, you know, just people change. It's not even about me anymore. Who cares about me? I'm secondary. I don't even care. You know, I can even stand myself sometimes. It's about you. What can I bring to you?
Thus we grow. The sentence at the bottom of page 162. Thus we grow, and so can you. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand. One man, one person, one book, one message, one program. Singleness of purpose. Sometimes the word singleness of purpose gets kind of dissipated throughout a whole bunch of things. This is the program. And this is the program that helped save my life, because one person took time out of his life to help me. This, I believe, is the one thing that I can help somebody else with. I may not. They may not want it. That doesn't matter to me, as Steve said, you know. And part of my contribution to life, because now I contribute to life, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I do things that I'm told. I do things that I know are legal. I do things that are pleasurable. Part of my contribution in life is to help you have your contribution to life.
And when people talk about how they don't want to carry the message, they can't carry the message, they don't know how to carry the message. I mean, it says right here in 163, you forget you have just tapped the source of power much greater than yourself. By this point, you have found your higher power, I hope. By going through these steps, by doing, you know, a fearless and thorough moral inventory that was not on your own. If it is, there's a crack in your foundation. When you did that honest-to-goodness fifth step with your sponsor and told him or her every last dirty, sordid secret in detail, there was just not you two in the room. Your higher power was in the room. When you were changing in 6 and 7, and when you made that list and you made those amends, and on a daily, you know, the daily reprieve of doing the 10th step, and then you're seeking your higher power, he's always with you at this point. You are not alone. You have tapped a source bigger than yourself. And that fear, I know it can come back in a heartbeat. But oh my God, what am I going to do? I might kill someone if I don't give them if I'm not the perfect sponsor, if I don't show up. It's not about you. It's about you and this book and God. Just like Heidi said, with the God and the book, I am just a channel. That's just all I'm here is, like, feet and hands and feet. That's all I do is hands and feet.
Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. Steve, I love the way, is he in the room? I just love the way he said that, that when he's doing step 12, when he's doing this work, he feels that he's getting direction directly from Bill Wilson himself, because he didn't know, you know, how to do it. We don't know how to do it if we take direction. And
but
it,
I want to just finish that sentence. Okay, we cannot be sure God will. Yes. Okay, this is so great. I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. And then it goes on to say, we cannot be sure. How do you know? I don't know. You might. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him, not upon my sponsor, not upon you, not upon her or him, upon God. He will show me how to create the fellowship I crave. But there's an asterisk. If you do want to get in touch with us, here's how. I love AA. Just in case. If God doesn't work quick enough, here's our P.O. box.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. If your own house is in order. Now, somebody actually asked me if I had a copy of this, and I happened to find I did have a copy in this book. It is, I don't know whether it's actual reality or not, but I still like it. It is a copy of Dr. Bob Smith's prescription pad. And it says four, like all prescription pads do. It says four, and then it tells you what you need to do. And it says four alcoholics, always remember it, trust God, clean house, help others, signed Dr. Bob Smith. And it's always a reminder of what we have to do.
Okay, so, you know, just to wrap up, I you know, if we haven't excited you about the big book, then I hope you come back next year. I just want to finish by reading the last paragraph in A Vision for You, because it's so perfect. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you.